Welcome to another broadcast of Celebrating Truth with Dr. E. Fay Williams, Esquire, on the Artist First Radio Network. Dr. Williams currently serves as National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and President of Natural Health Options. All past shows can be downloaded free on demand. Visit the archives for Dr. Williams and Celebrating Truth at artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you so much, Tony, and welcome to Celebrating Truth. I'm delighted to be with you on this President's Day. You know, President's Day is taking on a whole new meaning for me because I've got a favorite president right now, and I do celebrate. Even though I had to work, I celebrate President's Day now. We've got some wonderful guests for you this evening, as usual. But just keep in mind that this program is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, and we're delighted to be with you here every Monday on artistfirst.com. Let's see. We're going to go to our first guest right now, and we have another wonderful sister. I don't know where Clem finds all of these wonderful sisters, but she does. And again, we have from Yazoo City, Mississippi, although she lives somewhere else now, but we're going to talk with Ms. Cassandra Leach Woods. How are you, my sister?
I am fine, Dr. Williams, and yourself?
All right. Well, let's see now. You're in Harris County, which I know to be Houston, Texas.
You are correct.
Mm-hmm. And you're a senior investigator. Tell us a little bit about your job. What do you do there?
Well, I am a senior investigator with the Harris County District Attorney's Office. Now, currently, right now, I'm assigned to the Domestic Violence Unit, and I've been here since about 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just who doesn't know that that in itself is a challenge, but it's rewarding at the same time. But prior to coming to the Domestic Violence Unit, I did maybe 5.5 years in the Trial Bureau. I did a couple of years in the Misdemeanor Division, and then I've also been assigned to the Juvenile Division.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we have a great interest in both the women, who I assume are the victims more often of domestic violence than the men. And, of course, we have a great interest in the National Congress for the children. We have many children's programs. Well, first of all, I want to talk a little bit about the domestic violence unit. What do you find happening there? Are we getting more of it, less of it, or exactly what is happening?
You know what, Dr. Williams? What seems to be parallel here is that when the economy gets worse,
mm-hmm.
And you know we all are suffering in a recession right now or trying to recover from that,
mm-hmm.
this type of social ill seems to be in step with what's going on with our environment. Holidays bring about an uptake in the number of domestic violence cases that are reported. Why? Because the holidays bring on stress. You know, so you already have a tough economy, and then holidays and things like that roll around, and our numbers are reflective of that.
Well, I understand the same thing happens on football Sunday, too. Do you find that to be true in Harris County? I mean, I don't know what happens. Do all the men go crazy on football
I can tell you exactly
Sunday?
What happens. Yeah, it happens with those football Sundays, but let's throw in another factor, and that factor would be how about a little alcohol intake?
Mm-hmm.
That's what would cause those statistics to go up on alcohol Sundays. I mean, on alcohol Sundays, on mm-hmm. football Sundays.
Well, that's about the same, alcohol
Sundays. Football Sundays.
Uh-huh.
Now, let me tell you a little bit about this unit that I'm assigned to, Dr. Williams. It's a little different than most, and it is simply because of the size of Harris County.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll tell you this about Harris County. It's the fourth largest county in the nation. Well, Houston in itself is the fourth largest city in the nation. And we're dealing with a population of 4 million people. So, you know, if you kind of start looking at your numbers and your figures, you've got a population of 4 million people,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a given square mile area.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then, and I don't know if I didn't state to you, but prior to me coming to the Harris County District Attorney's Office, I was with the Harris County Sheriff's Department for 13 years. And now I've been here 14 years. So, you know, I'm definitely... Harris County, I've been with Harris County like since 1984.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so coming here at the DA's office, I'm still tied to the Harris County Sheriff's Department.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, wow. Did you learn to use all those big, bad guns over there in the Sheriff's
Department?
Oh,
absolutely. I'm most proficient in my handgun usage. Yes, I am. I'm an instructor. But now what I was going to tell you about this unit, that the reason I say it's different than most, we are definitely considered a large agency as opposed to your small and medium-sized agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So in my unit, not only do we have 9 prosecutors assigned just to the Harris County, and what the official is the Family Criminal Law Division, but you'll help hear people refer to it as the Domestic Violence Unit. So we have 9 prosecutors. And with those 9 prosecutors, we have 3 investigators, one being myself and 2 others here. In addition to that, that's different from medium and smaller agencies, we have caseworkers assigned here.
Mm-hmm.
We have caseworkers, and I mean, these are not just people, you know, these are licensed caseworkers and social workers. And so in addition to assisting women who have become victims of domestic violence, and we say women, but we know they aren't just women only, but in addition to assisting them with the criminal offenses that have been committed against them, they can come here also for protective orders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I do, too, is I assist with serving protective orders. And sometimes these women don't necessarily have to have a criminal charge pending.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a good thing, because that doesn't mean that you're not in dire straits just because the law has not been involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you can come in here on any given day. We open the doors at 7:30 in the morning, and we have a waiting room. And sometimes it's standing room only.
So people don't have to go before a judge to get an order?
A protective order.
Oh, okay.
A protective order now. It's a big difference.
Uh-huh.
Say a woman is assaulted, and a patrolman goes out to her home, and he files assault against a family member by the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
What that officer will do in addition to filing charges is file what we call a MOEP, which is a Magistrate's Order for Emergency Protection.
Mm-hmm.
And the life of that is, what, about 90 days. But now, in addition to that, because when that expires, you know, her danger isn't necessarily over. What we encourage her to do once those charges are in the system is to come to our division here at the DA's Office, the Family Criminal Law Division, and once she's here, we'll get her what we call caseworked. She'll come in and she'll talk to caseworkers. Now, mind you, quite often some come in and they want to drop the charges. That's not mm-hmm. uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got people.
But by that time, they've probably been sweet talked and told it's never going to happen again. You know,
you
I don't know
it.
What was wrong. Oh, I know. I've been a victim there, but I never dropped one. That's for sure. But now, when you get that order, as you said, you're really still not finished because you're not safe just because you have the order. I mean,
right.
If someone is crazy and they want to do it, they're going to do it anyway, despite that order.
True. Well, the reason I mention that is, okay, that officer can file for that magistrate's order for emergency protection. But in addition to that, he or she can come to our office and, like I said, get caseworked, and they can apply for a protective order. And the life of that protective order can be as long as 2 years. So you got two separate instruments that are available for their immediate assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the magistrate's emergency order for protection goes into effect once those charges are filed and he goes before the judge.
Mm-hmm.
The one that has a little bit more life to it takes a little bit longer, but she's still covered during the duration with the MOEP.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we just jumped right into the subject.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Really, no, it was my fault. I went there, but we didn't really talk about you and your connection with Yazoo City and where you went to school, little things like that. I'm a Southerner, too. I'm from Louisiana. You sort of grew up in Houston. But I want to know a little bit more about you. Clem keeps bringing all these wonderful sisters up from Yazoo City. I'm beginning to think I need to go by Yazoo City and sort of organize a chapter of the National Congress of Black Women that's bringing this program to everybody. So tell me a little bit about your growing up in Yazoo City and what that was like, and why'd you leave?
Well, let me tell you about Yazoo City, and I say this to people all the time, no joke. You haven't lived till you've gone to Yazoo City. And
mm-hmm.
It's home. That's mm-hmm. It's the bottom line to it. It's home. Now, I wasn't born in Yazoo City. I
uh-huh.
was born in Chicago, believe it or not. But
oh, okay.
Yes, I was born in Chicago.
You're
but
born with the real gangsters.
Yes. But now, you know there's a pipeline between Yazoo City and Chicago. You know,
uh-huh.
the relatives are either in Yazoo City or they're in Chicago, and they move to Chicago, and they stay there a while, and they move back. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the rest of my siblings were born and raised in Yazoo City. I'm the oldest of 4, you know, and it's home. Now, mind you, home is not what it used to be, but those those friendships and those ties and those family ties that we developed back in the day, you know, they're lifelong. And that's why friends like Lane and Clem and all of us, we will forever be friends.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And so many of us that have ventured away from Yazoo City, we never lose sight of it, and we always want to go back and try to help make changes. But now, yes, that's where I was raised, and I went to school there. St. Francis was a private school at the time before they integrated. I went to St. Francis, and I graduated from Yazoo High. And then I went on to Tougaloo College, where I graduated with a B.A. in psychology, with honors, I might add.
Well, excuse me, Mom.
Yes. And, you know, and one thing about me, and I have a story, and I, in addition to being here at District Attorney's Office, I'm always out in the community going to schools, and I like to do career days and youth programs and what have you. I was a teen mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so my daughter, I had my daughter when I was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a junior in high school. So what I thought that I would do, being the responsible person, was to go ahead and graduate a year early from high school. I was in a position to do that so that I could take care of my daughter, and I did that. I graduated at the end of my junior year. So my parents, and both of them are still alive and well in Yazoo City, and that's another reason why I eventually want to get back home. You know, I want to spend time with family. But both my parents were teachers at one point or another.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, in terms of what you do in law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
Did you study something in particular, or did you learn that on the job?
Well, no. People ask me all the time, what made you want to be a police officer? I had no master plan, Dr. Williams. You know, even though I know planning is a good thing and people teach that, and I even try to impart that upon my children, but sometimes the stars just line up for you.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do, when they do that, when they line up for you, you can either take advantage of it or you can, you know, let it be a wasted opportunity. And that's kind of how it's been for me. I had that child, and I thought I was doing a good thing to just get out of school and take care of my child. And then my father says, well, what are you going to do next? I had no plan. He says, oh, you're going to do something. Long story short, I ended up at Tougaloo College.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now this takes me back to that point that it takes a village. I could not have done that without my family. My mother.
I was going to ask about your family. How did your family feel about your getting into law enforcement and becoming the first black female detective in the sheriff's department in Houston or Harris County?
Right. Well, my mom was, of course, you know, mom would be the one who would have the greater concern. She says, San, and she calls me San. Do you really want to carry a gun every day? Well, Dr. Reed, I had not considered that, in all honesty.
Well, Mom, that's one way to keep the guys from messing with me.
That's true. That helps my daughters out these days. Yes. But, you know, and I didn't think about it. And I said, well, you know, now I've had a gun on, you know, as part of what I do for the last 26 years, I probably would feel naked without one. You know, but my parents and everybody was super proud of me when I got promoted to detective. And I did. I got promoted to detective at the Sheriff's Department in 1989. And it wasn't until the day of the promotion that I was even made aware that I was the first one in the history of the Harris County Sheriff's Department to have done so. And it took me aback. And so, you know, when, of course, I was more than proud. And, of course, we put that in the Yazoo Herald. You know, that was sent back home so that everybody would know about it. And immediately I went into the Child Abuse Division, and I worked there for like 5.5 years. So that was my trademark aspect when I was at the Sheriff's Department. I worked Child Abuse for 5.5 years. After that, I worked Internal Affairs for a short while. But because of that experience I gained in working Child Abuse, I was called on quite often to teach courses of investigating child abuse, and I've done so at other police agencies. I've even done it at some local universities here, Rice University. I have a good rapport with Sergeant Baylor over there, and I've taught that class several times there.
For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to Celebrating Truth. I'm Faye Williams, your host, and we're talking with DA investigator Cassandra Leach Woods. I wanted to ask you, Cassandra, about women in law and in being police officers. We've heard so many negative things put out by men, of course, about women in the military, and they're not wanting to have to depend upon a woman to take care of them in a situation if they got in trouble. Tell us a little bit about female officers. Are there jobs in which they do better, they handle them better than their male officers?
You know what? There's probably a stereotypical answer to that. You know, they have a tendency to think women would be better with children, and, you know, women might be better with women. But what I've come to know from my own game, from my own personal experience here is that it's not a matter of gender, Dr. Williams. It's more so a matter of attitude and disposition of the male with whom you are working. I have seen some males that blew me out the water because they were so gentle and professional with children. And, you know, just from knowing them, generally speaking, I would have a little bit fearful as to how they would handle that. So it's not more so about gender. It's more so about your personality and from whence you came. That's what I've come to know. Now, what you'll find, though, is in a lot of situations, especially where I've been assigned, child abuse, sexual abuse of children, you know, domestic violence, people have a tendency to want a female to be, you know, do you have a female officer available? Well, because, you know, statistically, we are not, we're such a minority in this male-dominated career, we cannot allow the public to come in and think that they can, I won't say dictate, but, you know, request a female and expect to get one just because that's what they desire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we have one available and we can't accommodate, we will. But, you know, for the most part, we want them to understand that everybody who's assigned or trained here, you know, is as good as the next person.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand you write poetry. How does that fit into your job and what you do now?
It is my outlet. And, you know, here we go again. The stars just line up. I didn't set out to do that myself as well as my sister. We just used to write poetry growing up. And so that's what I do. And what I find most interesting is, you know, I have two daughters. I have two biological daughters. I have three children. And I have a daughter who's 35. She just turned 35 on Valentine's, Miss Dominique. She is a special ed teacher in Marshall, Texas. And then I have a son who's 22, and his name is Timothy Woods, and he's a senior at Prairie View, communications major, as a matter of fact. And then my youngest daughter, 14, that's Madison. Madison is in attendance here in Houston in a dual language program, so she's fluent in Spanish. She speaks, reads, and writes it. My oldest daughter, who's now, like I said, in Marshall, Texas, she has a four-year-old, so I'm a grandmother, I'm a mother, mm-hmm. I'm a police officer. You know, I wear all kinds of hats.
And I suppose as a police officer, you're never really off duty, am I correct?
You are so right.
It sounds like my job, too, though.
Oh.
I'm a lawyer. When you police officers arrest people, somebody has to defend them.
That's right.
And somebody's got to take care of the children when there is a situation where there's child abuse. So my early days of being a lawyer were in child abuse and neglect.
Go
right ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, no, we're never off duty. Matter of fact, it's gotten to the point it's a mindset. You know, technically speaking, if anything happens out there, especially on plain view, you know, I'm obligated to rise to the occasion. Now, what you have to take into account is, especially being a single mom, what about one of those occasions when my daughter's with me? I've had one experience, and I talk about this when I go and teach at these academies and classes. On a particular instance, my son, who's 22 now, he's my stepson. That's what my point I was making back there.
Mm-hmm.
I say
mm-hmm.
that just for technicality reasons only,
mm-hmm.
just for the record, because people who know me know I didn't have a son, but he is my son. He was his father and I married. He was about 3 or 4 years old. He's been my son ever since. So at the age of five, he and I took my older daughter to the store, and she went into the store next door, and I said, well, he and I would be in Payless next door just killing time waiting for her to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, lo and behold, I'm in the store with my son and in the back trying on shoes, and this lady comes up and she says, get your son. Of course, I'm thinking he's done some. What did he do? She says, no, get your son. And she starts making the gun finger, you know, holding her hand with the gun as they were robbing the store. Now, mind you, I ran to the store just to take my daughter up there before they closed. I have on short pants. I'm looking like Tina Turner by the head.
I got legs and all, huh?
Oh, yes. And so this lady is telling me this. Once I get a gist of what she's saying, I have to instantly make a decision right then and there. Am I going to trust her, or do I rise to the occasion to deal with this law enforcement issue? So I made a decision in a second to let this lady, please, ma'am, hold his hand. I told her to hold my son's hand. Don't let it go. And so as I went into my purse to pull out my gun, she almost did a Fred Sanford, like had a heart attack. She didn't know if I was part of the robbery or not. I said, no, ma'am, I'm a police officer. So I showed her my ID. I said, hold his hand. Don't let it go.
Wow.
And so, you know, I did tactically what I thought best, and I swept to the left side, the right side of the store just to see what was going on, and I walked up the edge. I saw this guy with a ski mask on. Immediately, I didn't believe he had a weapon. I thought he had his hand under his coat pretending to have a gun, but you can't take that chance.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure for my safety and the safety of my son and everybody else in there, I swept the rest of the store and went up the left side to make sure it was clear, no other parties in there.
Mm-hmm.
As I just, the second before I decided to make my move, he exited the store, and so which I was pleased. Anyway, he exits the store, and he leaves, and I tell the store owner to call 911. And I pursue him, and he had a truck waiting for him, so he got away. And it turns out they had been committing robberies in their area. But, you know, that's a good example of you never know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the next day, here's that gender thing about the guys. Oh, I've been waiting for that all my life. I would have blown that SOB away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand, and they didn't bother me with that because my son and I got out of there safely. My son didn't have to witness anything violent. You know, and we all live to see another day.
Well, wonderful. I knew we were going to run out of time. I had much more that I wanted to talk with you about, but we have two more guests, and we are going to have to go. But we'll have to have you on some more time so that we can talk a bit more about the challenges of being a woman in law enforcement.
It would be more than my pleasure, Dr. Williams. It's been an honor. I even dressed up for you, even though I knew it was radio.
Oh, my. All right, then. Well, again, thank you so much for being with us today.
I thank you.
All right, and long live Yazoo City, Mississippi.
Go Yazoo Indians.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. Well, thank you so much. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Celebrating Truth. I'm Faye Williams, your host, and we'll see you in just a moment.
If you're an African-American man, you need to know about oral cancer. Oral cancer is more common in African-American men than in any other group in the U.S. If you have a sore or lump in your mouth that doesn't go away after 2 weeks, see a doctor or a dentist. Most often, these symptoms don't mean cancer, but it's important to get them checked. If you do have oral cancer, it can be treated more successfully if it's caught early. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health.
listening to Celebrating Truth on the Artist First Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Dr. E. Fay Williams, Esquire.
Again, thank you, Tony, and welcome back to Celebrating Truth. We always have such great guests. We have Ms. Clem Clark, our executive producer, who's been getting wonderful, wonderful guests for us. And today is no different on this President's Day. We want to welcome now to our program, brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, Ms. Josephine Woods Patterson, or should I be saying Officer Josephine Woods Patterson?
Yes, Officer Patterson. Actually, it's Officer Woods. I work under Woods. I have that professional name.
Okay. All right. Well, you are a police officer, and you're one of Clem's wonderful people who knows something about Yazoo City, Mississippi, too. Looks like this February Black History Month is all about Yazoo City. So tell our listeners about your connection to that city.
I was actually born in Yazoo City, Mississippi, and we moved from Yazoo City when I was four. So, but we came back every year because my grandmother still had the connection with her sister being there and all of our relatives being there. So we moved to Kansas City, but every summer was our destination back home.
Now, you're in Kansas City, Missouri?
Yes, Kansas City, Missouri. So I bring you greetings via from Yazoo City, home, born to Kansas City, from Kansas City, Missouri.
Well, you know, I was scheduled to come to Kansas City, Missouri this but I passed it up because I have another engagement with the president at the White House. So I hope you'll forgive me for not coming up. But a couple of my friends will be coming up to visit with Congressman Cleaver in Kansas
yes.
City.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll come next time now that I know a police officer there.
Yes.
Okay,
come
then.
Visit me.
Okay.
I'll take you around.
Will do, and then maybe by that time you'll be a member of the National Congress of Black Women. I don't know how much Clem told you about our organization. We're the sponsors of Celebrating Truth, and we are the ones who put Sojourner Truth in the United States Capitol. Don't know if you've had a chance to see our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. That's nationalcongressbw.org. If you haven't had a chance to see it, I trust that you will take a look at it, and it may be that you'll want to become one of us, because we invite all of our listeners, all of our guests, to become members of the National Congress of Black Women. We are the fastest-growing, most progressive black women's organization in the country. And so welcome to Celebrating Truth, and I'd like for you to just tell us a little bit more about yourself before we get into your work.
Okay.
You have children? Are you married? How long have you been a police officer?
I am married. I have three children. I have one son. My son, he's 30 years old, and I have two kids, Rona and Robin. I have a husband, Patrick, who's retired police after 30 years, and I have been with the force over 26 years.
Wow. Well, how does your husband feel about staying at home while you're going out and doing the dangerous work of a police officer?
He likes it. He likes being at home. He likes being retired. It's me saying, oh, you're still in the bed. I'm up at 4:45.
Mm-hmm.
Headed to work. So I actually teach at the academy, and I've been at the academy for 17 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I guess I want to ask, what inspired you to go into law enforcement? There was a woman on before you who's also from Mississippi, and she's in law enforcement. So I'm just wondering, is there something about Yazoo City that inspires people to go into police work?
My inspiration, I think a lot of watching TV. I like watching lots of cop movies. So, and then once I went to college, I got my degree in criminal justice. But I didn't go right off into law enforcement once I graduated from college. I decided I wanted to teach school for a while. And then after about 5 or 6 years, I decided I wanted to do law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. And did you take special classes or you did on-the-job training?
Well, we have an academy. So mm-hmm. once you apply, then you go to an academy, which is 6 months long. And then they train you and prepare you to go out to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So I did 9 years out in the streets prior to going inside into the academy.
So you knew someone who was in law enforcement before you got involved?
No, I didn't. I had no connections at all to law enforcement. No one ever talked to me. I just knew my degree was in corrections, criminal justice, and I liked everything about it. It seemed like all my grades were good when it came to my specific classes. And it was just something that I enjoyed, working with people and dealing with people and trying to help people who at times couldn't help themselves and just didn't know that direction that they needed to go in, where just someone friendly being able to say, you know what, I can help you. And it may not have been something criminal, because everything we do is not criminal, because we wear lots of hats in that profession.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you have a family, and I'm just wondering how law enforcement affected you and your family when you decided to go into that field. Did you
Everyone
have little children?
Was so proud of me. Mm-hmm. My son, he was 2 at the time, and he didn't know, and I worked nights, so and the shift was very important to me on what shift that I actually took, because I didn't want someone else raising my son. I wanted to be the one raising my son as a mom who cared about the direction that her child was going in. So I worked the night shift. So he was asleep when I was at work, and the important time I was there and available for him. But there was no one who really inspired me. It was a self-inspiration that this is something I'm going to do, and I went for it and was able to go, because getting into law enforcement is not always easy. You have to know someone, but if you keep yourself clean and your record clean and your background clean, then it makes it that much easier to get into law enforcement.
Well, that's where I was going to go next, in terms of any challenges. What were some of the challenges as a minority female in law enforcement? We know we hear a lot about challenges of women in, say, the military. Do you have similar challenges in law enforcement?
Right. I think the most thing, because it is a male-dominant field, they expect you to act like them. And so my challenge was I had to stay true to who I was. Mm-hmm. And I made sure that they knew that whatever you're doing, that's not me, and that's never going to be, and I'm going to be true to who I am. And they had to, they learned to respect that, because I carried myself in a way that it demanded respect. And so forth, they did that because of the way that I carried myself. And so I think the biggest challenge is if you allow them to change who you are, they will.
Well, if you had to name one incident in your career that stands out most, what would that be?
I think when I received my 25-year ring, that was one that I was proud that I wouldn't see myself being here that long, because it seemed like that's a long time, and I would have never thought that I would be at this point. So I was very proud that I made it that far. And one other thing that really stands out, we do a program, Shop with a Cop, and I was able to take a little girl around and actually shop with her, and the joy that she had with shopping meant so much to me that I could do it every day.
Well, is this like an at-risk child that you were working with, or just any?
Yes.
No. Okay.
Yes, they picked the kids, you know, kids that didn't have anything, would not have been able to go Christmas shopping. So they brought these kids, and every officer was appointed a kid, and we just took them shopping. And they only gave them, you know, so much money. But if you want it, it's in my pocket, I'm going to pay for it.
Well, you know, in the National Congress of Black Women, which I chair, we have a program called College for Kids, and mm-hmm. we invite people in to talk with these young people to help them decide what they want to be in life. Do you ever have an opportunity to go out and talk with young people and perhaps talk with them about your job, and can you think of anyone who's been influenced to go into police work because of you?
I have schools. A lot of the schools will call me and ask me if I will come out and talk with, like, all-girls schools. I've talked to lots of all-girls schools. The challenge, we had a program where we were like mentors to college kids who we went out to the schools, and they were giving out scholarships, and we were their mentors when they went out to school, that we would visit them and encourage them. And those kids that we mentored were those kids that came to the academy.
What would you say has given you the most satisfaction in your job of all the things you've done?
A lot of those, that would be one of the main ones, seeing ones that we didn't think would actually come into law enforcement, they did, and they're still there. So that was a success. If we saved one, that was worth it all.
Mm-hmm. Do any of the young people come back to you and say, oh, I was inspired by you, you know what you told me, I still remember it? Do you ever have young people do that?
All the time. They visit me all the time. They come in. They even call me Mama Jo because I act like everybody's mother. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because if I see that they have a problem, I'm going to them. You know, I'm going to pull you aside and say, this is what I'm seeing. You need to change it because you're not going to be successful at this career if you continue down the path that you're on. So I have no problem going to them because I want them to be successful. Like, I'm here for you, whatever you need. You can come to me. We can talk about it. We're going to get you on the right path, and you're going to graduate. And I always tell them the main thing for me with them is it's all about respect. You've got to give that respect. When you go out there, you treat people the way you want your parent, your grandmother, your brother, your sister to be treated. But it's all about respect.
Well, if a young person came to you and said, well, I'm thinking about going into law enforcement, what would you say to that young person in terms of what's going to be their biggest challenge, what would be their biggest barrier to becoming a police officer?
Their biggest challenge would be themselves. Because if this is what you want to do, you let nothing stand in your way. Because you can do it. I had one officer's son who the father did not want him to become a police officer. But I had to convince his dad, this has been a good career for us. I said, why are you holding your son back from a good career? Because it has been nothing but good to us. And he wants to do it. If I have to be the one mentoring him to be successful in this career, I will. But he wants your approval. But I will help him. So I encourage this young man to become law enforcement, and today he is.
So does your family get a chance to intermingle in your work? I mean, are there activities where they are involved? And if so, are any of your children in police work too? Did they get inspired to do the same thing you're doing?
No. My son, he works for Farmers, and he has dreads, so he don't want to cut his hair. I mean, he would be a great officer, so he's not going to cut that hair.
You mean police officers can't have dreads?
No, not us. They have to look clean cut and professional. We have rules and dress.
Well, what if they're working undercover though? They're intermingling with the community where people wear dreads? Would that be an exception? Would they be allowed to?
Uh-huh. They would. They would allow that. But it takes a while to grow those. They usually don't stay in that unit that long for those dreads to grow as long as they could. And he's known in the community, so they would know him automatically. He would not fit in undercover. So my one son, he's a fireman, but you know who's going to be my police officer? My 6-year-old granddaughter.
Oh, okay.
That's going to be my police officer.
Yes.
Yep. She loves the police, everything about the police. That would be her.
Uh-huh. Okay, then. Well, we'll look forward to having her out there, and we know she's going to be a great one, then, since Mom is a great one, and we'll teach her all of the best there is about police work. And it's so important for young people to have mentors, and when you have them in your family, that makes them even better. But I wanted to ask you a question about balancing your work and your family. How do you do that?
It's called priorities. I keep my family life separate from the job, because we could get caught up of everything, law enforcement, police, everything that we do, but I keep my private life separate from my professional life. So we balance it fine. I work a lot off duty, a lot of jobs, but I make sure when it comes to my family that's still number one. You know, church is number one with me. That, you know, we attend church every Sunday and every Wednesday together. So I try not to schedule anything that's going to interfere with my family life.
And one last question. What are your plans after law enforcement? I find a lot of people leave law enforcement at a relatively early age. What do you have plans after your retirement?
would like to get more involved in that mentorship with young people because we're losing them. And I would like to make sure that, you know, these prisons are filling up daily. You know, Kansas City, our homicide rate is so high. And I take my recruits into schools, and the kids really like that. I would like to really get involved in the schools, making a difference with the kids. So we're not filling those prisons up anymore with the kids.
Well, I want to thank you so much. We've been talking with Josephine Woods, a police officer in Kansas City, Missouri. And we want to just wish you the best of luck in all that you do and continue to inspire young people, whether it's to come into law enforcement or whatever they do in life. I'm always happy when my guests say that they work with our young people.
Thank you,
Ms. Woods. You've been listening to Celebrating Truth. I'm Faye Williams, your host. And I don't know about you, but this is President's Day, and since the last election, President's Day has taken on a brand new meaning for me. Make no mistake, I love my president, Barack Obama, and if you love him, too, I want you, instead of getting angry about all the disrespect and the narrow-minded people and the stupid stuff that we're hearing and all the things that people are calling him and the threats that are made on him and his wife, the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, I want you to take it out in constructive anger, not just plain old anger, because that can consume and destroy us. I want you to go out and register at least 5 people. Get them ready for the election that's coming up in November. Yeah, just make sure that your family, your friends, all are properly registered to vote, you know, because all kinds of roadblocks are being put up to prevent our voting. But don't let that happen to you. Be out there. Be an activist. I'm Faye Williams, and you're listening to Celebrating Truth. We'll be right back with our last guest, and that's going to be a surprise.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, the adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
You'll be your best friend for life.
Listening to Celebrating Truth on the Artist First Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Dr. E. Faye Williams, Esquire.
Thank you so much, Tony, and welcome back to this last segment of Celebrating Truth. I always like to conclude our program honoring one of our members, and our salute today goes to one of our newest members, Ms. Barbara Allen, who is the organizing chair of our Battle Creek, Michigan chapter of the National Congress of Black Women. All of our members are special, but this one is doubly special. Barbara is the great, and add 6 times to that great, granddaughter of our beloved Sojourner Truth. You know how much we love Sojourner Truth here as we celebrate truth. Hello, Barbara. How are you?
I'm great. Good evening, Dr. Williams.
Well, thank you so much for spending just a little bit of time with us. I was so excited when I met you and learned that you were actually in the same bloodline as Sojourner Truth. You know, and we think so much of her that we actually put her memorial in the United States Capitol. Just want to ask what it feels like to be in the same bloodline as such a powerful woman as Sojourner Truth.
Well, it actually, I feel blessed, first of all, and honored to be in that bloodline. You know, I've always known from a child that I was related to Sojourner, but it wasn't until like 1999 when I found out that I was a part of the sixth generation grandchildren, and that was such a distinction. And then I found out at the same time that I was the first descendant to graduate from college. So it's just been great. It's just been great knowing that I'm in her bloodline, and I've been doing everything I can to just try and honor her legacy.
And that was my next question. I wanted to ask, how have you and your family kept her memory alive? What are you doing, or do you have plans?
Well, our family have kept a lot of letters and newspaper articles about Sojourner. It wasn't until recently that the family really knew how they was related, or specifically knew. We met a historian from Battle Creek that gave me a lot of information how we are from Sojourner's bloodline. So just recently, probably like 5 years ago, I decided just to honor her legacy by opening up an outreach center to help black women learn job skills. And I opened that in her name, and I was honored to let everyone know that I'm doing this to honor Sojourner and to help black women go further in this life.
Well, have you seen any of the formal memorials to Sojourner in the Battle Creek area?
Yes, I have. I actually spoke at the unveiling of the statue, and I believe that was in 99 as well. So I was there. I got to celebrate with a lot of the dignitaries and the community, and we were just so excited about it. And I go there from time to time because I live probably 20 minutes away from the statue, but I'll go there from time to time and take a look at her statue and actually talk with her.
We're talking with Barbara Allen, who is, I don't even know how to say it. Sometimes I just say great six times, you know, six times granddaughter of Sojourner Truth. And this has been such a special pleasure to be meeting you, Barbara, because as you know, the National Congress of Black Women honored Sojourner Truth by putting a memorial in the United States Capitol. And I just want to ask you, Barbara, I know that you've seen pictures of that statue. How do you feel about her being the first African-American woman honored in the United States Capitol? We'd say we brought truth to the Capitol.
Right. Well, I think it was fitting because Sojourner was such a courageous woman. You know, she went out and spoke for black rights and spoke against slavery in a time where women didn't even have a voice. They didn't even have any kind of power. And I just think it's so fitting that she's in the Capitol now, sitting strong, and everyone can walk past and remember what a great leader she was, even at a time where she shouldn't have been able to lead.
Well, you know, she not only worked for abolishing slavery, but she also worked for women's rights. So she was a suffragist, and we honor her for that reason, too. And I always tell my white women friends, no women had the right to vote, not even white women. Their fathers and brothers prevented them from voting just as they did us. They prevented black women from voting because they were because we were black, and then from voting because we're women. So we had that double handicap. But white women were also handicapped. They could not vote until, you know, 1920. Now, even black women didn't get a chance to vote then. We had to wait another 40 years, you know, for the civil rights movement, although Sojourner had worked very hard to gain the right to vote for women because it was her powerful voice that brought strength to the women's movement. So that must make you very proud, too.
Oh, it does make me very proud. That even makes me prouder because she had a twofold purpose. She was a black woman, and she was fighting for two purposes, the black rights and women's rights. So I am severely proud of Sojourner, everything that she stood for, everything that she done, and I just want to contribute to her memory in some way as being a descendant. I want to give back to my community and help women and African-American women just go a little further in this world.
Well, I know that when you get back to Battle Creek, you're going to have a lot of people joining the National Congress of Black Women, because it is our intention to keep the memory of Sojourner Truth alive. And it's a special honor to meet one of her bloodline. And thank you so much for being with us today, Barbara Allen. And Barbara, you have agreed, and I thank you, to organizing a chapter of the National Congress of Black Women in the Battle Creek area. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Williams, for inviting me here to D.C., and I have enjoyed myself while I was here.
Okay, and it's just about time to wrap up, but before we go, we'd like our listeners to know that I'll be traveling to Los Angeles. Just got back from Little Rock in Camden, Arkansas, where we formed two new chapters down there last week, and this week we'll be traveling to visit with the Los Angeles chapter. They have a big program coming up. In conjunction with the White House Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, they're hosting a Community Empowerment Forum on Sunday, February 26, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at 2nd AME Church on 5500 South Hoover Street in Los Angeles. If you need more information on that program, be sure to call 1-800-895-3180. That's 1-800-895-3180. I will be traveling there to be with our Los Angeles chapter and our wonderful chair there, Miss Judy Matthews. And I'd just like to say that that's it for Celebrating Truth today. We'll see you next week. And don't forget to listen in on the National Congress of Black Women's radio program called Urban Radio 2000. We've got great music there by which you can work. We have gospel, jazz, blues, anything you want to hear. Ted Miles, our general manager of communications, really knows his music, and he keeps great music up for us. Also want to remind you to go to www.nationalcongressbw.org. We invite all of our listeners to become members of our organization or to become donors to the wonderful projects we have. College for Kids, Young Ambassadors. We have an awards luncheon honoring men and women for the great things they do in the community. We have a lot going on. And, of course, on our website, we have articles that I write every week for the Trice Edney Wire Service. So we hope you have an opportunity to read some of them. Don't forget, again, to see our website to find out how you can join our organization. And you may even be moved, as I said, to donate something to our many, many projects or become a member, encourage others to become a member. We enjoy having you with us every Monday, and we'll see you next Monday. Thank you, and God bless.